Last year, while we were listening to firecrackers and watching 4th of July parades, Brian and I began the serious work of planning to move from Ohio to Wisconsin. We were excited to begin simplifying our life a little bit. Of course, we quickly realized that owning a larger house was sort of like owning the world's biggest junk drawer. You find that after a while, it's filled with things you need and things you don't need, things you love, things you can't quite identify anymore, even some really big things that got in there somehow, and now you don't know how to get them out. Some of those big things we're going to have to go, and some of the small ones too, and all of the things we had forgotten about, and maybe even some of the ones we were pretty sure we would never forget. For any of you who've ever had a move, this may sound familiar. And of course, what I failed to take into consideration was how difficult responsibly handling the stuff that had overflowed our life that wasn't part of our everyday experience was going to be. If any of you are ever tempted to post ads on Craigslist and eBay and Etsy and Regretsy and the local post and Facebook, all of which say things like for sale, cheap collection of strange things that made sense at some point, responses, sadly, are not overwhelming. People said they wanted things and immediately moved to Outer Mongolia without a forwarding address. Our moving date got closer and closer, and somehow we still owned all the things that we had chosen to part with or that were not central to our lives. I thought for a moment of selling the house as is, oddly half-furnished. I started to wonder about the cost of a dumpster. And every time that dumpster crossed my mind, I would think of my grandmother who had grown up poor in an orphanage because her family couldn't feed her. And I thought about her collecting little pieces of fabric to sew into her quilts. And every piece had value, no matter how small, and she would adapt the designs over and over. And I thought about how she would feel seeing me chucking things in a dumpster. Trash Day is amazing. It's a snapshot of what we once found important. So important that we went out of our way a little or a lot to own it. We paid to have it shipped. We went out and got it. We waited in lines. Sometimes we inherited it from others who found it so important that they gave it to us. Some of it, once we decide to pitch it, is still valuable enough that others liberate it from the roadside before it even makes it to the truck. And what doesn't get liberated, that makes it to a landfill. Our stuff, discarded junk. You use do well in general at minimizing junk. It's very true. We recycle, we buy carefully. And yet we're surrounded by a world where disposable is a way of life. Easier and cheaper to get rid of it than to fix it or to change our lives so that we never needed it. Easier to accept planned obsolescence, lousy construction. There are only so many battles we can fight, and that toaster may just not be worth it. And it's the shadows of this worldview that interest me. A culture that's based on material disposability rather than repair leaks like rancid water into other parts of life. The way we treat things becomes the way we can treat people, and life becomes a commodity. We learn to treat difficult relationships the way we treat difficult repairs. It's too expensive. Throw it out. Get a new one. Get a simpler one, an easier one. It becomes problematic when we consider our first two principles, the inherent worth and dignity of every person and striving toward justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships. I'm as guilty as anyone else of sliding into thinking that some relationships are disposable. They are broken, They are too difficult to fix. They are too expensive to fix, and I don't have the time or the internal currency. Relationships with people I don't understand or who don't understand me. Relationships where I get it wrong time and time again, and they are happy to tell me so. Ally relationships are some of the relationships where it's easy to get it wrong. And it's easy to be tempted to say, it's too broken, I can't fix this. Put it out by the curb. The readings we heard this morning verged on angry at points, and these were some of the milder ones I could find. Some of them were so aggressive that I could not use them in a church. My own recent experience has said a lot. When Ferguson, Missouri happened, there were quick calls that went out all over this area for vigils, for support. And we went, Brian, myself. And when we got to Dineen Park, which is where the vigils were being held, I noticed something interesting. There were probably 10 or 11 of us there whose skin was pale. There were over 150 people whose skin was not pale. And they were angry, but they were determined. What they put out a call for was not violence, was not to go to Ferguson and cause trouble. It was to set up voter registration. How could they ally with the people of Ferguson, Missouri, to arrange voter registration, education about what the problem was, and systemic organization to help change the structure of the Ferguson police force from being 87% white, three black officers, to representing the face of the community, which was almost 90% black. While I was there, a young white man who had a bandana around his lower face was being very verbal. We're going to go. We're going to show them. And he was getting louder and louder. And one of the young organizers of this thing finally turned to him and said, what exactly are you going to show them? When you go and raise your voice and yell, I will be the one who gets hit. And that's real. In Ferguson, a young white man threw a bottle at an officer. They turned and beat the black man next to him into the ground. It's caught on multiple videos. That's the reality. Being an ally is hard. These are risky commitments to connection that leave us open and vulnerable. They cause pain. They hold up our privilege, whatever it is, to a mirror that we would rather not see at times. Activism in and of itself can be simple. We work to support a political candidate who we feel supports our worldview. We fight for our own interests and the interests of others. That's activism, and it's a marvelous thing, and we try to engage in that as often as possible. But it's the equivalent of wrapping your own belongings in plastic before a move. You're taking care of yourself and the people just like you, and that's not a bad thing. But the call to activism is broader than the causes that personally impact us. You don't just have to wrap your stuff and move it safely. You are responsible for what happens to all the other stuff, too. And that other stuff is being an ally. To respect the worth and dignity of each person and to strive toward that justice and equity and compassion, I have to work toward freedom and dignity and justice for the people who aren't like me. I have to walk with people and fight for people whose experience of the world is nothing like mine, and frankly, I may not even get it. How we walk matters. If our hymn is right and walking with you is our prayer, then we have to walk some roads that we're not familiar with and sometimes ones that lead to places we don't want to go. Last June, just about the time we were moving, a writer named Mia McKenzie, who I would heavily recommend, she's otherwise known as the author of a book and blog called Black Girl Dangerous, very articulate speaker. She wrote a piece called 8 Ways Not to Be an Ally, a non-comprehensive list. I can't repeat it here and I can't read it here. The language is aggressive and occasionally vulgar. But it captures the essence of some of the ways we get lost trying to find our way on those roads. I want to look at some of those steps today, even if I don't do it with her flair and style. As you use, we get presented with opportunities to stand on the side of love often. I go to marches and protests and vigils. I stand in solidarity with the people of Ferguson, Missouri, and with the oppressed and threatened LGBTQ people in Uganda. I've gone on mission trips and spent freezing nights in a cardboard shanty town to call attention to the plight of the homeless. But one act of solidarity doesn't make me an ally forever. Fighting oppression is an ongoing, never-ending struggle. And if I'm not in those trenches each time I get a chance, I don't get to keep wearing my good guy badge that says ally on it. A year or so ago, a UU minister, senior minister, who should know much better, who does a lot of LGBTQ work, announced to a room full of transgender, genderqueer, LGBTQ folk, "Well, I'm just one of you. I mean, I've been doing this so long, it doesn't matter." And the response around the room was a resounding, "No, you're not. When you go out in public with your husband, you don't have to worry that someone's going to throw a bottle at your face for holding this hand." Once I realized that unless I keep doing the work, I'm not an active ally, I have to realize that it's not about me, and that's a hard one. Knowing how sophisticated I am, it may surprise you all, though I have put my foot down my throat so many times, it's not even funny. The taste is lousy, and it hurts. The first time someone corrected the way I was helping, I was ready to fuss out of my way. "What do you mean? What do you mean I'm not doing it right? Can't you see all the help? The help I'm giving here to you who's really got to live with this. I'll shut up now." I learned to be quiet and listen. I learned to accept it as true that maybe I did say something that was a microaggression or that was just plain culturally not right for their culture. My education will never be more important than what they wake up to every day. While it's okay that I was only asking a question because I wanted to help, it's also okay for me to hear that I don't get to ask that. It's rude. Or that it was a microaggression, or that it was just flat-out racist, sexist, ableist, or something else that I haven't thought of. Mia brings up ally dating, and it's an area that many of us don't deal with often, but it's there. One of the big problems is that dating only people of a specific race outside your own, announcing that you're straight but you only date trans men or trans women because you're standing in solidarity, it doesn't make you an ally. It may mean you're an ally. It may mean nothing. Or it may mean that you have fetishized a particular group and are simply using them to make yourself happy. One of the phrases I've heard around ally work and in UU circles is, I don't see race. That also goes for gender or ability status. The problem is, this does nothing for the person you're talking to and everything for you. It takes away part of who they are and says to them, I'm just not going to see that bit of you that doesn't look like the bit of me. And now I'm off the hook. The problem is that they have to live with what that difference means every day of their life. They don't have the luxury that their ally does of announcing, oh, it's just invisible. I just won't be black today. I just won't be trans today. It's invisible. Doesn't work very well. It's easy to be uncomfortable at times about personal privilege. And it's terribly easy to be an ally until we feel that we've done enough and then we get to go home to bed. But being an ally, that commitment doesn't stop when I've done enough not to feel guilty right now. It means I'm committed to working until success, until everybody can go home to bed and not worry about this anymore. Another not so fun point of being an ally is that it's really easy to tell grandma she's being a racist. That's simple. You can tell your Uncle Marvin to stuff a sock in it. You can even thump your brother and tell him that was a bad comment. It's really hard to go into a hall of power. It's really hard to go to a radical feminist and saying, you know, you're being transphobic and I don't want to continue this conversation. Being an ally means doing it in public. It means putting yourself out there and setting yourself up for the same pain and embarrassment that the people you are supporting suffer from. Not just at home, not just where it's safe. It means doing the legwork and not getting on TV, doing it because it's right, not because you'll be thanked. You're not there to be a savior. You're just there to help carry the load. A foot soldier in a battle that may help to take away some of your privilege. Doesn't that sound counterintuitive? Being an ally means that while I could and can and should read and reread and read again the words of marginalized people, I can only learn from them. I cannot teach them. They are not my story, and I cannot teach the feel of them. To paraphrase LGBTQ author Helen Boyd, not being a jerk doesn't make you a miracle. It doesn't even make you a good person, just a decent one. My goal isn't to save the world. My goal is to ask you to join me in being an ally, to join me in committing to make the world a little less broken. Spot by spot, place by place, fight by fight. Walking with you is my prayer. And may the roads we walk lead us to places we wouldn't have chosen and we wish weren't there. May we walk together with the marginalized and the voiceless and the unseen until we can all go home to bed. May we bend the arc of the universe toward justice. Amen.